Off the Ball, GAA.
I'm actually thinking I probably need to stay fit if I do want to come back and play for Portlaoise next year. So
wow, proper ringer.
Get me, please. Just like with Jalan, was
put
it?
Put myself in the shop window here.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome along to Who You Got. It's not Mick, it's not Jer. Don't adjust your sets. It's Shane for this episode this week. And delighted to have in studio two football men. I'd call them football men. Colin Buhig and Phil Egan. How are things, lads?
All good, yeah.
How are you feeling, Shane?
Buzzing for this. It's going to be a busy weekend of Premier League action. I like when I know we're back into it now a couple of weeks, but when the international week is over, and we're back into the Premier League, it's something that just lights up inside you. You're back to, not that I don't like the international weekend.
No, it sounds like you know what I mean. Colm sits beside me in the office. He knows how much I like international football.
He gets me into it.
Right.
Do you know someone loves something and they're infectious with it?
Yeah.
And Phil comes in with a glint in his eye.
But that's Phil with football
generally. Brighter glint than usual, do you know what I mean?
And then
we talk about Turkey, Georgia. Or Turkey, Georgia.
I see what you did there.
And he'd be very detailed, like. And then suddenly I'm interested.
I give him the team sheet and I say, keep an eye on him.
Yeah. But Phil could be doing, he could be doing commentary some night of Armenia and North Macedonia.
Well,
and he will, that's a proper football man. Because he will pinpoint an Armenian footballer that none of us have heard of. That all of a sudden is signed by, I don't know, Napoli or Brighton, and we're
the
like,
the devil's advocate to that argument is, of course, well, it is kind of your job as well at the same time, yeah, like you're covering these, you know.
Yeah. It's our job too, and we didn't know about them.
Well, we're not doing the commentary of this game.
It's true. He's just doing his job. It's Who You Got. So we make predictions each week as to four Premier League or Women's Super League or international, whatever might be results. Here were the results last week. This is actually the season standing. So,
like, talking about the two of us, like, as if we're experts.
Yeah, that was like a skit there.
Yeah.
Nathan, Will, and
two chumps.
Nathan, Will, and JD, 34 points. John had an unbelievable weekend last weekend, to my recollection. Mick is on 32. Owen and Jer on 30. Myself on 29, fourth from bottom, in fact. Kathleen on 24. So, a bit of a gap between myself and Kathleen. That's okay. Phil and Colm. I'm 23, so I don't know what I'm doing chatting to you two lads about predictions, but
well, you're talking to the top two from last season. The only full season we've done.
It's true. Yeah. And you're having a second season.
Now there's just talk
stink.
Are they two going to go down?
We're Reading 07-08,
Manchester United 74.
A lot of people,
Ipswich 102, hopefully not.
Yeah.
A lot of people talk about, you know, who's got the Christmas number one, but you don't want to be bottom of Christmas.
No.
Because stats would say you go down.
That's fair.
Unless you're Brian Robson's West Brom.
Yeah. Well, you two.
Kieran Richardson.
He was unbelievable. Jeff Horshill.
Well. Ah. See, he's a horse that he will score.
Yeah. Point proven. But John proved last week that it's far from over. It's an early season. It's only, end of November.
I don't know if you both noticed, but we have this...
Look at that for everyone else,
right? We have this Teams channel individually. And John was very...
Nine
kind,
points.
Wasn't he? Was he very kind with his victory? He was like, it just goes to show everyone... It's still open season for everyone involved in this game. Nine points.
That's like, so John took nine. Jared took five.
That's the highest ever, isn't it?
Yeah, it has to be.
I think there's a few sevens. I don't think there's ever been nine.
No, there was eight last season.
Three results, three exact scores. John
got
nine.
Phenomenal.
Jared got five. I was happy with my 4 points from last weekend. Mick had three, and then a whole host of twos. Cullum, Owen, Kathleen, Nathan, Phil, and Will with 2 points last week. So nobody had a damn squib week. But impressive showing from.
Would
JD.
You prefer to get four correct results are one correct score and one correct result and two wrongs? What gives you more of a buzz?
Four correct results.
Yeah, me too.
There's just nothing beats that. I can imagine.
If that's your bread and butter.
Yeah.
I think there's something exhilarating about getting the score.
It's like
I wanted it on the scores, not the results.
It's just take your points kind of thing.
I would say I've never had the experience, the feeling of having four correct scores, but I would imagine it's the feeling I had when I held my child for the first time in the hospital. I'd imagine having four correct scores exactly is pretty much on a par in terms of feeling. Just my thoughts.
Yeah.
Obviously a bit tongue in cheek if my partner's listening.
No, you meant that.
I meant it by your eyes. Wholeheartedly.
Aoife will love that.
Let's look at the first game because she will. Liverpool versus Manchester City, of course. We have a live commentary of this game on Sunday afternoon and Off the Ball here on News Talk, 4 o'clock. Split in this one. Cullum has gone for Liverpool 2-1. Owen, a draw, 1-1 draw. Jer has gone City 2-1, as has John. Kathleen and Mick have gone both Liverpool 2-1. Nathan has gone for a 1-1 draw. Phil, you've gone 2-1 Liverpool. I've gone for a 2-2 draw. And Will has gone 3-1 Liverpool. Discuss, lads. Cullum.
Well, Pep Guardiola has never won at Anfield with Manchester City in front of a crowd.
Right.
So they did beat Liverpool 4-1, but it was back in 2021 when there were no crowds at the games yet. So this is a difficult match for Manchester City and Pep Guardiola anyway, but not in this unprecedented phase that the club find themselves in. You know, the reality is by Sunday night, City could be 11 points behind Liverpool. And in fact, that is the feeling that is exactly what's going to happen. I think they have a huge conundrum in midfield. They saw it with the problem with Rico Lewis and Ilkay Gundogan playing in there against Spurs last weekend. They got ripped apart. And there's no sign of that being fixed anytime soon with Rodri or Kovacic away. So it might be a case of Manuel Akanjias going to play holding midfielder. Mm. But they need to plug that gap, because you're talking about a Liverpool side who are playing really compact and very good ball in the middle of the park. Like, we had Martin Reiser on the show this week on Off the Ball Breakfast, the Ipswich Town cult hero. And he was saying he saw Ryan Gravenberch up close and personal, and he's never seen anything like this guy in terms of his vision and football brain and his technical ability. And that's just one of the many talented midfielders that Liverpool have, and more importantly, are playing very well under Slot. Not to mention Curtis Jones's form so far this season since becoming a dad.
There you go.
Now and even during the week against Real Madrid, he was okay in the first half and then was better in the second half before he got taken off. They just have options galore. City are properly vulnerable.
Yeah, just on Gravenberch, even, like, the thing that he does so well, he can glide away from a player so easily. Like, he can put a Kanji in there, and obviously he's got physicality, but he doesn't have the same technical ability that City need in there, where, like, that's where the battle will be won. It's really interesting, the fact that Anfield hasn't been a happy hunting ground. And you mentioned the time that City won there and there was no crowd, and that was... There's so many similarities to what City are going through right now to what Liverpool went through that season, that Van Dijk got injured.
Yeah.
So Van Dijk gets injured in October, but Liverpool are still top of the league at Christmas. But the rot really kicks in around January. They lose to Southampton. They lost 8 league games in 12.
Yeah.
And they recovered to finish third, but they were gone by then. But that City game where they lost 4-1 was just... where they were at the time, where just everything was going wrong. And there's so many, when you watch City at the moment, there's so many similarities where you can get at them easy. They concede a goal and then another one goes in quickly. Mm-hmm. Like when Feyenoord got the first goal the other night, like I was thinking,
they couldn't. But
when they got the second, I thought, they're definitely going to get the third goal.
Yeah.
And it just, it was.
And the manner of those goals.
It was slapstick stuff. Just Keystone Cops defending. Ederson coming out for the third goal. It's just so bizarre to watch a Guardiola team with such a lack of composure. Somebody mentioned Gundogan there. He has not got anywhere near his level of when he left. He was good at Barcelona, but I even remember watching him for City this season away to Newcastle, a game that they ended up drawing. But I remember just thinking to myself, I've never seen Gundogan play so bad with the ball.
Yeah,
but he's an issue obviously without the ball as well, because he doesn't seem to have that mobility that he had a couple of years ago.
There was an element of each time City were losing in this streak, I was like, oh, that's going to poke the bear. They're definitely not going to lose the next one, but it just keeps going on. Like, I don't know, like, especially going to Anfield again, you're thinking, oh, well, surely they're not going to lose this one because it's gone too far. But going to Anfield, it's not easy with Liverpool in the form they're in.
No, and it's funny because the results have been in various competitions. Like, there was a couple of them in the Champions League, which ultimately... probably irrelevant in the grand scheme of things for City, that they're going to qualify, you'd imagine.
Spurs in the Carabao.
To the knockout stage. And then Spurs in the Carabao Cup. And they've won the League Cup countless times, the feeling of, like, under Pep Guardiola, like, several times they've won that. So it's not really that much of a priority. So then you're actually down to only a couple of Premier League games. And in those matches, they've still been in the game. They still had chances galore, which you'd expect them to. The problem they have, I think, is midfield. And it's not just Rodri. Like, they just have a really soft core. And it's kind of shocking to see it. And I think what was different, the feeling as well, is that after the Feyenoord game and the full-time whistle, first time everybody ever heard a smattering of boos at the Etihad under Pep Guardiola. And that's a new feeling for him as well. And I also think that this is pretty much the first time I think that City are going into a Premier League game under Pep as underdogs, surely.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's ever really felt like this before, where it would be seen as a hell of a feat if City were to go to Anfield and win, and possibly even a draw. But the reality is that a draw doesn't do them much good. That's so far behind there.
Yeah, no, I think a draw is good for City.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But in the context of the league.
So you've both gone 2-1 Liverpool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's probably just thinking of how does Slot approach it? Because if you think back to how Klopp's teams used to have success against City when they won, they used to start like a house on fire. And
yeah.
City couldn't live with it. But Slot's a bit more measured. Now, there will be spells in the game where Liverpool are on it and City can't deal with it. But I don't know when that spell is going to come. And we don't know the extent of the injuries from Liverpool's win the other night. Konate going off at the full-time whistle didn't look good. He'd be a big loss. I suppose the plus for Liverpool with Trent Alexander-Arnold back means that he, you would imagine, will start even if Connor Bradley
did well before the injury.
And you know, it looked like it was an issue with his hamstring, but it could have been just cramp. But it could have been something that takes a few weeks to recover from. But a Konate would be a big loss. And like, there is certain things, like at the start of the season, nobody picked Liverpool to win the league. So here they are now, 8 points clear. And I'm waiting for them to kind of, everyone, if they don't win the league now, say, oh, they bottled it. But how can you bottle a league you weren't expected to win?
Yeah.
Now, I think this is a great chance for them to take City out of the equation. Now, I know we'll talk about them in a bit. Arsenal are coming. Odegaard is back. They're partying again. But this is a chance. I felt when Liverpool played City last season in this fixture, it was a draw. I felt Liverpool let City off the hook that day. They can't let them off the hook this time.
Yeah, and of course, if City get a penalty, Creevin Kelleher is invariably going to save it as well. So
if he plays.
There is that, if he plays, yeah.
Yeah, well, there is that there element. There is the possibility that Alisson's back in here, which is mad. And Mo Salah loves this fixture as well. Talking about red-hot Salah, come back. That's slightly myths that he missed the penalty against Real Madrid as well, and the form that he's in. I'd be really interested to see what they do with Kevin De Bruyne, if he starts or not. I haven't seen an awful lot of him.
I think you have to. I think you have to throw in him, probably Jack Grealish.
The big hitters.
Feels like they need to pack the midfield because I just think they're going to get destroyed in centre mid.
Let's bring in Lee Phelps from William Hill as well. Lee, this is a, well, that's a tough one to call, as Cullum kind of half hinted at there. City possible underdogs for once, maybe?
Yeah, and it's been a bit of a buzz around the traders this week because we've worked out this is the first time since 2017 that Man City have been an outsider in a Premier League game. They're 12-5 to beat Liverpool at Anfield. Liverpool are 11-10, and some people may think that's a touch of value. The draw is 13-5. That game back in 2017, it's 7 years and 7 months ago, was against Chelsea, incidentally. Chelsea, since then, have had eight managers. Haaland made his debut in 2017. He scored, 280-something goals since City were last an underdog in a Premier League game. So, but I think they deserve it, underdogs, though, to be honest with you. I mean, everything that you guys have just been saying, the five straight defeats, you know, the crazy situation in the week, three up and then drawing 3-3 and then the whole Pep Guardiola stuff afterwards. I mean, it feels like they're imploding in front of our eyes. But Manchester City, as we know, could just win every game in the Premier League from now on, couldn't they? You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that they are capable of doing that. So, it was huge, though. A win for Liverpool, 11 points clear. A win for City, and suddenly it's 5 points. So, you know, there's a lot riding on this game. The draw is a big play, isn't it, at 13-5? Having said, you know, the wins are huge either side, but there's just storylines everywhere here as well. It's like, it's just fascinating. It's a football match and all the kind of drama around it as well. Can't wait.
Yeah, considering how early in the season it is, still feels like a massive game. I think for our charity bet, Leon, I'm going to take either the credit or the blame for this one. We've gone for Cody Gakpo as an anytime goal scorer, Madden form. I don't know. I've gone for a 2-2 draw myself in the game, so
Cody Gakpo is 11-5 to score at any time, so just a smidgen over 2-1. The 2-2 draw is a big prize. I mean, everyone's gone for both teams to score, I noticed. Every single prediction, whether it's draw, City, Liverpool, they're all both teams to score. It's 2-1 on, so justifiable. I mean, you know, if anyone, you know, listening, watching, wants to put that in, that could go into a bet builder. You know, I think both teams to score or overs on the goals to over 2.5 probably is a base layer for any bet builder. I agree. I think City have to come out and have a go at this game because they're not sure enough at the back to try and sit and contain Liverpool. So they've got to have a go. You know, as you guys rightly said, look, it could turn out to be an absolute stinker, couldn't it? But the way the games have been played recently, you know, I think in City's recent, you know, games, I think it could be anything. And I've gone for a bit more of an outlandish bet builder involving cards and shots on target and goals. I'll quickly run through it because I do quite like it. It's 12-1. So people can take out of this what they want or just use it. I don't mind. It's Mo Salah to score or assist. In 7 of his last 8 against City, he's either scored or assist. I've gone for Haaland to have at least one shot on target, 35 shots on target so far this season, and 9 on target in his last 5 games against Liverpool in all competitions. I've gone for Bernardo Silva to be carded, 7 yellows against Liverpool. That's the club that he's been carded against most. Already been carded against Arsenal and Spurs this season as well. And Luis Diaz, over 1 foul. 16 fouls in the league so far this season, gets his foot in, and those 4 together are 12-1, plus there'll be boosts that you can use on that as well. Impact sub on every single element of that as well. So if any of those players go off, the player coming on takes over your bet. So I like that. I think there's enough in it. I think I like the card element of it. I think there will be chances and goals. Really, I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait. But yeah, if you're going to go for Cody Gakpo, yeah, we'll take that one. My personal suggestion was going to be just Bernardo Silva to be carded at 11-4. I just thought I quite liked that, but let's go Gakpo then. I don't have to suffer the blame if it loses.
Absolutely. Lee, brilliant stuff as always. Thanks a million for jumping on.
Cheers, guys.
As always, who you got in association with William Hill? Remember, you must be over 18 and visit gamblingcare.ie for more info.
Bernardo Silva gets booked an awful lot in this fixture.
There's a spice to this.
Low-key tetchy is Bernardo Silva.
Well, I remember he didn't really appreciate the guard of honour that City had to give Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
At the Etihad at that time.
Not a fan.
No, but do you know what? If he plays for you, that's what you want to see. Mm. Obviously, it's going to wind up opposition players and fans, but, you know, that's what he's there to do.
Next game, lads, is Chelsea versus Aston Villa this weekend, which takes place at 1:30 on Sunday afternoon. Here's how we've gone for that game. So, Cullum, you've gone a 2-2 draw. Owen has gone 2-1 Chelsea. Jer's also gone a draw this time, 1-1. John and Kathleen have both gone Chelsea to win by 2-0. Mick, a 1-1 draw. Nathan, Chelsea 2-1, as has Phil. I have gone for another draw, 1-1. And Will has gone 2-1 Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've also, no one is supporting Villa in this one.
Villa have a good record at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
I think they won their last 2 league games there without conceding a goal. They have to go back to 2021 since Chelsea beat Aston Villa in the Premier League at Stamford Bridge. But I've gone for a score draw because it's a vulnerable Villa side. We're not seeing the one that was so flash at the tail end of summer and start of autumn. Mm. John Duran is no longer the superhero that he was in autumn, and the winter is freezing his powers a little bit.
Yeah.
But the thing with Villa is, I have no worry about them overall. I feel like they'll get a good point here in London and go back and regroup because they have players coming back like Boubacar Kamara, and like they've been brilliant in the Champions League. I thought they'd really struggle juggling domestic and European competition, particularly at that level and the level of opposition they've had to play in the Champions League, and they've taken to it really well. So I suppose it was somewhat inevitable that they'd have a little bit of a blip in the Premier League. It hasn't been anything too stark, but like drawing at home to Crystal Palace last weekend, Palace are decent, but this Villa squad, not just the team, the overall squad, should be beating Palace every day. If they sort out that little bit of drop in intensity and levels after big European nights, they're going to be totally fine. And they should be more than good enough to get a draw away to this very talented Chelsea side.
Yeah, no win in 7 for Villa. Amadou and Anna might be back for this weekend. I'm not 100% sure, but that would obviously improve and bolster their ranks. But you've gone Chelsea? 2-1?
Yeah, I mean, you can't really read anything into what happened last night with Chelsea in Germany because
Heidenheim.
Completely different starting 11. Mudrik scored a really good goal.
Lovely finish.
Set up by Sancho. He'll change it up again. Obviously, Pedro Neto was still out, so that position is up for grabs. But Nicholas Jackson has had a really good season. I thought his goal against Leicester last weekend was quality in terms of just how he harassed Wout Faas, and then the finish was beautiful. And you know, he's got a lot of flack last season, you know, got caught offside a lot, missed a lot of chances, but he's transformed it. Obviously Cole Palmer isn't in the European squad, so he's nice and rested. You know, he's recovered from that knock that he took So I think that I've no worries about Chelsea scoring. The reason I have Villa to score is because I think for all the money Chelsea have spent having Sanchez in goal, there's just an uneasiness about him. Even against Leicester last weekend, where Chelsea controlled the game, but you could even tell like the Chelsea fans just get that little bit nervous when Sanchez is involved in things, because he doesn't really assure you. Like, he's not that.
Doesn't fill you with confidence.
Definitely. No. It's a funny thing, because if Alisson does come back and goal for Liverpool, Keller can definitely start dreaming of playing his ball every other week at Stamford Bridge. Like, that would be a great destination for him. And I'm not wishing Kelleher's career at Anfield away, like, but if that does happen, like, I think that would be the type of club that he could do really well with. Now, he's, no matter where he goes, other than, I was saying to you the other day, other than Arsenal, he's going to be facing way more shots than he is at Liverpool. Mm. But this Chelsea side, it's a funny one with them, right? There's a load of talent. They can play, like, about, I'd say about 2.5 to 3 sets of different front threes, and they'd all be good. And there's, like, a real disrespect, I think, towards Chelsea. I think people think they're a bit of a joke now at this stage, and how they've acted and gone about their business since Todd Boehly came in. And I think people are kind of largely ignoring the fact that they've been pretty reasonable and consistent this season. And there's very little analysis of the job that Enzo Maresca is doing, other than it's going better than we thought it would when he comes in the door and the pre-season is whatever it is. And then at the end of it, he's telling Raheem Sterling and Ben Chilwell and the boys, go and find yourself a new club. And on the eve of the start of the season, which was at home to Manchester City for them, the Premier League, which they lost, but it was a kind of acceptable defeat. All the talk was like, how are you going to deal with this clown show? How are we going to stay here? This is going to end up in a disaster. And I think people are kind of having to, you know, wipe the egg a bit away from their face about everyone thought this is going to be a disaster. And it's been the opposite. It's been very kind of mundanely consistent.
The
young squad that has obviously got another season under the belt last season. And Maresca's a really good coach. Mm. And we wondered, would he be able to handle all the egos at Chelsea? But it looks like he is. And it certainly helps when you're winning games as well.
It does. Our penultimate game is our live game, first live game and Off the Ball Sunday this weekend. It's Manchester United versus Everton. 1:30 kickoff for that one. So, I guess for United fans, well, they got the win against Buttered Limt last night in the Europa League. Here is how Team OTB see this one. Cullum has gone 2-0 United. Owen has gone 1-0 United. Jer has gone for a 1-0 Everton win at Old Trafford. John has gone for 1-0 United. Kathleen, a 1-1 draw. Mick has gone 2-0 United. Nathan, a goalless draw. Phil, 2-0 United. Myself, 3-1 United. And Will, 1-0 Manchester United. Yeah, like, still early days in the Ruben Amorim. We're going with Amorim. Amorim. You're obviously a sports bullet man, so what's your take on this one?
It's, we're saying Amorim, but
that's what I've been saying.
Yeah, but we say Bruno Fernandes, but that's not how they say it in Portugal.
Yeah,
you know how to say it?
Fernandes.
Yeah.
I just can't get around to it. I just can't.
I feel it would feel almost sarcastic if we did that.
Yeah, it would. It would.
I'm sorry to the Portuguese listeners. I don't mean to offend you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that is a good point, because I mentioned on the breakfast show, Jojo, our sound engineer, was saying to us, it's Ruben Amorim.
Yeah.
But it's totally acceptable to say Ruben Amorim. Anyway, whichever way you want to pronounce it, the first week of his tenure in terms of games, it's been interesting and decent. 4 goals scored in 2 games, but at the same time, huge lapses in concentration at the back. And Amorim talked about the anxiety he felt before the Bodo Glimt game this Thursday night. And I think he's going to be feeling an awful lot of anxiety, because the culture will take a fair bit of time to shift. Because obviously these are the same players that have gotten the club into an awful lot of trouble in the last year alone. So that's going to age him, I would say, greatly. Just bear in mind, take note of the colour of Amorim's hair and beard now.
And then watch it in 2 years.
And let's come back to it in a couple of years. When his contract ends in, 2.5 years' time, let's see how he looks.
And his post-match interview last night, I enjoyed it. He was asked, are there many things you see in this team so far that you need to improve on? He says, all of it.
Yeah.
Everything.
I really like his transparency and the confidence in his own honesty. I think it's also very clever that he's doing this, because he's saying, from the off, there are going to be loads of mistakes, but I'm implementing this system and it's up to the players.
Yeah. It's going to take time.
So he's almost separating himself from it. It's like, it's going to be really inconsistent, and the lads out there have to prove to me that they're good enough to play there. So in the first game against Ipswich, it was Christian Eriksen and Casemiro. as the two central mids, which looked frankly unsustainable. And then in the Bodø/Glimt match, it was Bruno Fernandes and Manuel Ugarte. Now, Ugarte probably had his best game so far for United, which, to be fair, isn't saying an awful lot because he hasn't been particularly great. But he was good last night. Fernandes was his usual self going forward, but I think he's finding the defensive responsibility in this role very difficult to handle, as was seen in the first Bodø/Glimt goal, where he's caught badly for it.
Mm. Which players in that United team do you think will bed in nicely to Amorim? Is this new system? Like, you see players coming back from injury as well, like Malacia last night caught out obviously for pace for one of the Bodø/Glimt goals, but you see the likes of Shaw back in, Mason Mount obviously back from injury as well. He's got more options there, and it's the next few weeks. I think it was at 9 or 10 games they might have in December. It's going to tell a lot about these players.
Yeah. I think even before he got the job, even last season, I would have said the future is the three is Mainoo, Garnacho and Højlund.
Yeah.
And obviously we saw Glimt, like the first Højlund goal last night is sensational. It's an unbelievable strike.
But, two touches,
and
yeah.
There's a guy that everyone's talking about, Victor Gyökeres, but Højlund has been playing in a non-functioning team. He's a number nine that doesn't get any service. So let's see what he's like when he gets service. He showed last night he knows how to score. And he has a lovely array of finishes. You think of the goal he scored against Brentford.
Yeah.
Like he is somebody, for a guy that hasn't scored that many goals for United because he doesn't really get enough chances, he has a lot of confidence usually when he's in front of goal with a chance.
And he's got the quick flick in him, doesn't he? He gets in front of defenders quite well. Like, there's obviously some things, Xerxes I'm not convinced by, but it's obviously early days for him as well, but...
It's early days, but I'd already be surprised if he turned it around because it's been that bad to start with. It's rare that happens at a top club that a player does. I wish him well. I hope he does, but it would be amazing.
There's already talk of
him
going back to Serie A.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the other signings who has hit the ground running is Mesraoui.
Brilliant assist.
Yeah.
Last night. In that role as the right hand kind of that...
The right hand side.
Yeah.
The wing. Well, I was going to say, I think the wing backs, although Amorim calls them wingers, not wing backs.
Yeah.
He said it's the wingers. I think that would be a huge pressure point because the personnel isn't really there,
not
I don't think.
At the moment. No.
He's going to have to make do with that.
Yeah, you need all action.
Definitely.
Up and
they're just going to be up. So Ahmad plays the first game against Ipswich on the right and sets up the goal, but he's hooked.
Yeah.
Then he tries Anthony last night. That's not really going to work because he's not going to have the pace to go forward. Malacia is like deeply unfit, as was seen in the second Bodø/Glimt goal last night. So then you have Dalot, who came on at half time. He's probably a reasonable option at the moment. Shaw, you wouldn't think, probably has the legs to go up and down anymore, but can play the left of the three centre backs.
Yeah,
so I think that's a huge pressure point. And also the future of Bruno Fernandes in this team. Now, it'll be opposition dependent, but then against the bigger sides, where are you putting Bruno Fernandes here? Because I think when everyone's fit, the two centre mids would probably be Mainoo and Ugarte.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good base. And then ahead of that, you'd have Højlund as the number nine. Garnacho, he seems to like already and probably play a lot of the games. And then do you play Rashford? Where does that leave Fernandes?
And Ahmad as well. He's been really good in the games that he's played. But then you have to, Bruno Fernandes is arguably United's best player.
Well, I don't think there's any argument that he is.
Yeah.
But I don't actually know where you put him.
That's the problem.
Mason Mount would be interesting to keep an eye on. Obviously,
he likes him.
Yeah. One thing that always comes up when people talk about Mason Mount is his intelligence on the pitch.
Mm.
But the problem is he hasn't been on the pitch.
Yeah.
So that will be key for Amorim to see, can he keep him fit? And it was strange seeing the likes of Malacia playing and even Luke Shaw, but how long can they sustain it? And that's what he needs. He needs a squad that is durable. I've always felt watching United in the last decade, compared to their competitors, they've never been anywhere near the same levels of fitness.
Ever.
Yeah.
I've just never seen it. They've never had great stamina. No. I don't know what is going on at the club. Never.
Strange, isn't it? One of the commenters on Off the Ball Breakfast this week said the best kind of ability is availability.
Yeah.
And that is pertinent for the likes of Mount and Shaw. You know, these guys have to get a run of games going before we can properly talk about them. We haven't even touched on Everton really, like a couple of nil-nils in the last couple of games. It's 15th in the table. It's difficult enough to go to Old Trafford, but you certainly wouldn't, with United's up and down nature, you wouldn't rule them out getting something out of the game possibly.
No, it's how they start, and the last couple of times they've gone there, they haven't started well. And then it's become a difficult game for them. But if they can just withstand the first 20 minutes, because, you know, there will be a buzz. It's the first league game at Old Trafford under Amorim. I know last night was his first home game, but it was an experimental side he put out. But this will feel like, you know, his first real proper home game.
Yeah.
With all due respect to Bodø/Glimt.
If Everton keep United out even in the first 2 minutes, it'll be interesting because they've been in his first two games so far. There's a goal after 81
the
seconds, after 51
yeah.
seconds.
Well,
as long as Jordan Pickford doesn't do what Muric did, or the
he'll be all right.
Was a howler of a
the Bodø keeper last
year. Everton have had got a couple of draws at Old Trafford in recent memory, a 1-1 and a 3-3. You just can't trust United.
No.
But also,
no.
You wouldn't have faith in Everton. That's the thing.
Yeah, it's a strange game.
You just need, I think, over the next few months, United fans want to see patterns of what he's trying to do. And there will be highs where you think, I can see what he's trying to do. And then he'll be brought crashing down to earth when you lose a game. Like, there's so many similarities where I can remember Klopp started 2015, a couple of big away wins, away to Chelsea and away to City. But then I remember they got spanked 3-0 to Watford before Christmas when Adam Bogdan was playing in goal. And like, you kind of, you have the highs and then you just feel so low after that because you're going, like, and that was just before Christmas. But you know, you will get that.
Yeah, that's football. The final game, London Stadium, 5:30, kickoff tomorrow, Saturday, West Ham United versus Arsenal. Here is how Team OTB has gone to this one, and it's a clean sweep across the board in favour of Arsenal. Cullum's gone, so an away 3-1 win. Owen 3-0, Jair 3-1, John 2-0, also 3-1 from Kathleen, a 3-0 from Mick. Nathan has gone 3-1 Arsenal. Phil, you've gone 4-1, I've gone 3-0, and Will has gone 2-1.
These two games were very interesting last season. West Ham won 2-0 at the Emirates and Arsenal won 6-0 at the London Stadium.
Right, it goes swing.
Yeah, they bullied them that day, like, from the set pieces in this fixture last season. Gabriel is obviously key to all that. Doubts over his fitness, but it's very hard to read a Mikel Arteta fitness update. It doesn't give much away. Zinchenko's already revealed that he does tell some of the players to play along.
Yeah.
As if you're not playing, but don't let anyone know.
Oh, yeah. He said too much.
Yeah.
He said too much.
But I think Arsenal have looked brilliant now since Odegaard has come back in. And
the game against Sporting was...
But even the Chelsea class. Game, it was his first start. Yeah. I mean, I thought he was brilliant. It just means that Saka obviously is key for them, but now opposition players have another creative player to think about. So it just gives Saka more space. We saw last week for the first goal against Forest. So, and look, people were saying, like, one player shouldn't make that much of a difference, but that's just the nature of certain teams. Like, Odegaard is their captain. He's just an exceptional footballer that can do a bit of everything. Technically brilliant. He can score goals. His movement is exceptional. So, of course, you're going to be far better with him in your team.
Yeah.
And you can't get a replacement for that. You can try and play different ways, but it won't be as effective. So, their team, they're starting to get all their players back to fitness. And Arsenal will be thinking, win tomorrow and a draw or a City win on Sunday, and they'd be thinking they're right back in at Liverpool.
Yeah, we can't really make an argument for West Ham in this.
No, I think for Lopetegui, say the win against Newcastle last Monday night, the James Park has been an actual literal lifesaver in terms of his job security for now. And they were warranted their victory too against, like, this is a good Newcastle side, inconsistent but a good team. And they kind of weathered the Newcastle storm in the first half because Anthony Gordon and Alexander Isak had two gilt-edged opportunities to score, but they did well as a team overall. So that will keep Lopetegui afloat unless there's a repeat of the scoreline last season in this game. I'd say he'll see out the weekend, but I firmly believe Arsenal will handily win this game. They've come back slightly different since the international break. It's two games we're going by, but they scored plenty of goals. And like Phil outlined, probably the most important player pound for pound in the league for any team at the moment is Martin Odegaard.
Yeah.
He's come back with a bang.
Also, if Lopetegui does get a hiding tomorrow, at least he won't be on the touchline for it. He's banned, so.
True.
They'll be looking for him, but
he'll be like, I didn't see that, it was on my phone.
Yeah. Next Premier League manager to be sacked, Russell Martin, 10-11.
Yeah, that feels a matter of when.
Yeah. Lopetegui then second favourite, 2-1, followed by Deitch, 6-1. So yeah, Lopetegui may be a stay of execution that Newcastle game, but still, Russell Martin, I think, will be looking even more so over his shoulder. Waiting for that one. Lads, pleasure as always. Colin and Phil,
thank you.
Thank you very much. That is who you got.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. Who you got? 18+. See gamblingcare.ie.